You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Good evening, everybody. How's it going? This is Tyler Dunn here with Bob McGinn for another Packers post-NFL Combine podcast. Bob, how in the heck are you?
Good. Glad to be back from Indy. Freezing rain and ice storms down there.
Yeah, it was
coming and going.
Pretty rough. Sleet, hail. It was coming down, but pretty productive week. A lot of different storylines going on in Indianapolis. We're going to get into all of that. JerMichael Finley, Johnny Jolly, Monty Ball, Travis Frederick, the offensive line situation. We got so much to talk about, Bob. I don't even know where to start. But first, what about that high school basketball last night?
We attended the Sheboygan North at DePure, WIAA Division I sectional at Ashwaubenon, a mile from Lambeau Field.
And it was pretty interesting. You know, DePure's got a good team. Your kids went to that school, yeah. Right? So couple brought kids, back some memories for you.
A couple kids played for the Redbirds, yeah. So definitely, I love high school sports in the state of Wisconsin. I used to cover it as a full-time prep writer in Green Bay, and I've never lost my love for it. Yeah. You know, Tyler, I can remember the prep games I covered in the late 70s, probably more in most cases than any Packer games.
Why is that?
I really don't know. I just don't know. But, I mean, I was young and impressionable then, yeah. Just learning the business. And, boy, I love high school sports.
The Wisconsin basketball scene is pretty good here. What people tell me that Dick Bennett, Bo Ryan kind of ushered in a different style of basketball, and it got popular. I mean, relatively.
Yeah. You know, I think, Tyler, the girls produce a lot more Division I prospects out of this state than the boys. Hmm. Yeah, they do.
But for God's sake, when is the shot clock going to come in? I keep waiting for somebody to shoot.
So you played as a prep in the state of New York.
Yeah, Western New York.
With a shot clock.
With a shot clock.
As we were discussing last night. So in Wisconsin, you got a 5-second clock out there, but you can kind of hold that ball for a long time, and you didn't like it.
It's just kind of slow and methodical, and you like it because it gives the underdogs a shot. But doesn't it just kind of dumb it down?
It does. I remember playing in Michigan, which has no shot clock, my senior year in a tournament game. We were ahead 4-2 at halftime. Team was holding the ball on us. I'll never forget it. The Manistique Emeralds.
I know you played girls basketball. 4-2 at halftime.
It looked like it, didn't it?
So what's it like in the huddle? What's your coach telling you? Hold the ball for these next 17 minutes and we'll go into halftime.
Well, they were holding the ball. And so
they were holding the ball.
He had to make a decision whether be aggressive or just sit back. And I guess he decided to sit back in this particular case, and so it was 4-2 at the half.
Speaking of basketball, what's going on with your Michigan Wolverines, Bob? I have to bring it up.
Go ahead.
Penn State.
They are soft, Tyler. What can we say? We're going to discuss soft in a football term here, but I mean, Glenn Robinson and the whole team's a complete mess right now. They're playing terrible defense, and they're just slipshod. They're just going the other way.
Yeah.
It's a bad time to be going the other way.
Well, I mean, the alma mater there, Syracuse, they're absolutely falling apart right now as well, although don't really feel too bad for Jim Boeheim. He kind of went off in his last press conference.
Boy, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, one of my buddies, Michael Cohen, was there covering the game, and he just asked Boeheim, you know, could you have used Derek Coleman's son to help defend Devontae Gardner, who just ripped him to shreds? I mean, let's be real here. Devontae Gardner looks like he's straight out of the YMCA, right?
Yeah.
He looks like, you know, kind of chunky, chubby. They tell me he was actually bigger, but completely dominated. And Boeheim just, you know, he was pretty irritated, attacked Mike, and said he should get into coaching. So, yeah, they're falling apart.
You had covered Boeheim for 3 years in college.
Well, you know, primarily as a beat writer for 1 year, but they were winning. Oh, okay. I mean, I don't know, they lost one or two Big East games. So he was always pretty chipper and in a good mood. I remember after one game early in the season, somebody asked Boeheim, is it a little premature to say your team is, you know, this could be one of the better teams you've had in a while? And he kind of paused and said, premature anything isn't very good. And people laughed. He said, my kids are sitting in the first row. So he was trying to crack jokes, not like that this year.
How old is Boeheim?
That's a good question. I'm not so sure.
65?
Yeah, I'd say mid-60s probably.
Yeah, right.
No good teams in college basketball when you think about it. I mean, who's good? I mean, Gonzaga?
Indiana went down at Minnesota. I mean, nope.
All right, let's talk some football. This is a Packers podcast after all. First, the NFL Combine. Who stood out to you? And really, how much does this kind of weigh into teams' decision-making come draft day?
It's about 10% of the equation. That's what I'm going to say. You know, I mean, you get a good medical. You get a good interview. Well, if 15 minutes is a good interview. You get a speed. You get a height and weight. 90% is the tape, right?
Right.
They allowed a few reporters to go in on, I think there was some on Saturday, but my turn happened to be going in there on Sunday morning, and I saw half the quarterbacks and half the wide receivers. So I'll just throw out two impressions from that. The guy from Tennessee, Bray, the quarterback, he was the most impressive of the early group that I was in there for. He threw the ball well. I mean, he was throwing 12-yard outs, 15-yard digs, these takeoff routes, post corners. He was impressive. He's got an NFL arm. So I know he's got all kinds of off-the-field problems, but that Tennessee underclassman looks pretty decent. And the one receiver who stood out was Justin Hunter from Tennessee. He just snatched the ball twice. I mean, he did have one drop, but his hands, you know, you see 30, I saw about 30 receiver wideouts going through this gauntlet across the width of the field, and you got to catch five or six balls. And he was impressive there, but he was more impressive on the routes. So those are the two guys who stood out in what I actually saw with my eyes.
And as we talked about back in that Seattle game, the own eyes are important to you. That's more than the film. I had to bring it up. You know, I don't want you pissing everybody off again, Bob.
No.
Okay, right. So wide receivers. You know, that could be a position the Green Bay thinks about here. They haven't taken. Have they taken one wide receiver the last 4 years? Could lose Greg Jennings. They might lose JerMichael Finley too. Ted Thompson likes to replenish that position. You know, a handful of guys that they might be looking at?
Yeah.
I'd say Marcus Wheaton was somebody I was pretty impressed with.
You saw him in Mobile.
All right, saw him in Mobile. Talked to him at the Combine. Little undersized. He's about Jennings' stature, what, like 5'10", 190, 187, something like that. But fast as heck. Ran track his entire life. And just kind of quiet, soft-spoken. You know, you got Tavon Austin saying he's the best player in the draft. You got Quentin Patton saying he's the best wide receiver.
All right, so Tyler, you wrote a story a couple days ago about some winners and losers. I didn't see the Monte Teo press conference. You did. You covered it. So you want to make a – I mean, I know this has been kind of over-covered, but what would you say, 30 words or less?
You know, I was actually out in that hallway – talking to somebody, and then Teo came out, and everybody did a dead sprint to the podium. I mean, people were staking out their seats earlier in the day. Remember, everybody thought Manti Te'o was coming out around 11:30, 12, and people actually were staking out their spots. It was a false alarm. I mean, go figure. It's pretty ironic. So Teo comes out, and it's pretty pandemonium. You got to give the guy some credit. I mean, he's incredibly naive, dishonest, all of that, but in the face of a lot of tough questions. He seemed calm, seemed poised. He answered the questions about as good as you could expect. I don't know, though. If I'm an NFL team for multiple reasons, I'm not taking this guy. You know, these mobile, athletic quarterbacks, they're not going anywhere. He's slower. He didn't look great in his workouts in his 40. And still, the story, there's still holes in the story. I know that he wants to put it behind him and just focus on football, but that just kind of seems like it'd be pretty convenient for him. There's just something fishy about it, and there's something left to be desired, wouldn't you say?
I agree. Right now, I mean, I wouldn't categorically say he's going to be in the first round. I wouldn't bet on that.
No.
Not after a 4.82 and the Alabama tape. I mean, that's horrible. I was around the table of Zeke Mata, the safety from Notre Dame. Yeah, he didn't run well either, but he could be a third round pick. Man, he did not back off at all. He was saying just how much better Alabama was than anything they had seen all year. I mean, he did not sugarcoat it. You know, just domination. There's some people from the Midwest who were trying to get him to say that maybe it was an aberration or maybe the long layoff hurt Notre Dame. He'd have nothing of it. He made no excuses. It was impressive.
So Green Bay could be looking at some inside linebackers, and this is not a great draft for inside linebackers. I mean, we were both talking to Kevin Minter from LSU.
Yeah.
He's one guy that maybe benefits a little bit from Tails.
You know, yeah.
Sloppy, uneven workout.
So we got to find out what happens to Hawk. Bishop's coming back. They still got a bunch of other prospects, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're deep. They have a lot of guys at the position.
Yeah. So, I think they're going to draft other things than inside backer.
So you did the story on A.J. Hawk's situation, talked to his agent, talked to people around the league. Is this guy going to be open to a pay cut? And does Green Bay even want him around? I mean, what's the latest with A.J. Hawk?
I wish I knew. I'm just not sure after talking to people here and there. A.J. and his agent are getting together this week face-to-face, Mike McCartney. And, I just don't know.
You know, reading between the lines, it sounds like they're kind of anticipating Green Bay looking for a pay cut, and that they kind of have to make a decision on what's the number for A.J. Hawk. Can the two sides find a number that's right?
Yeah. A.J. will find a job, no question about that, if he's on the street. Already one personnel director told me, he said, we'll take him in a heartbeat.
Is that right?
Yeah. Huh. Told me that a couple days before the combine. So he's a smart guy. And he's not a big play guy. He is what he is. And there's definitely a market for him.
How much do the injuries factor into this? Desmond Bishop coming back from a very severe hamstring injury. DJ Smith had the torn ACL. I mean, I talked to Desmond Bishop's agent. He said he's 85-90%. The rehab's going well. It was a clean surgery, all of that. But once he gets on the field, it's going to be really interesting to see how effective he is. I mean, he was arguably their best defensive player a couple years ago, but I guess we don't know quite yet what he's going to bring to the table.
Nope, we do not. And it's a massive factor in this defensive prospects for 2013. They need Desmond Bishop in the worst way.
Any of those other guys, Brad Jones, Jamar Lattimore, Terrell Manning, could they take a next step next season? And does that factor into the A.J. Hawk decision as well?
Well, Manning, we don't know. And, you know, I know he had some really good college tape. I mean, the guy made big plays, too. He had all kinds of picks and fumble recoveries, forced fumbles. Manning had that, the bacteria problem or virus problem. He lost all that weight. I have no idea what he's like from scrimmage. Jones, he's unsigned. He's going to be a UFA. If they cut Hawk, maybe they re-sign Jones. I mean, I really don't know. But otherwise, I think he's going to be out there and he's going to get pretty good money.
You know, I tend to agree that inside linebacker is probably not a position they really target in the draft. They have a lot of other areas they can go. But overall, when you watch that San Francisco game, both San Francisco games, when you see how the season ended 2 years ago against the Giants, this seems like a position where they need to get better. I mean, the eyeball test, the way they defended the read option, the way the league's going, don't they have to get more athletic at linebacker?
I think they got to get better at safety. You're still playing 12 games a year against dropback guys, Ponder, Stafford, Cutler. I mean, that's six games there. I don't think they're going to be, you know, real somewhat concerned with the read option, but
yeah,
man, you got to have people to play the pass, and that corners who can cover, safeties who can cover, defensive linemen who can rush the passer, and outside linebacker, another one who can rush the passer. So I don't know. They don't stop the run very well either, Tyler. Mm-hmm. You're right about that inside backer thing. They're 26th. The last 3 years, they haven't been better than 25th in average allowed, yards allowed per rush.
You know, there's just a sentiment out there that you heard in some parts that when Bishop went down in the preseason opener that, yeah, it was a big loss, it's going to hurt, but in a 3-4 defense, the scheme, it wasn't as big of a loss as it could be for other teams. I think that thinking was kind of thrown out the window. This team missed Desmond Bishop in such a huge way.
Correct. In every way, shape, and form.
Yep.
Leadership, mentality, temperament, nastiness.
All right, well, if they need to get nastier, they got to get meaner, they got to get tougher. We were there at some of these interviews with the draft prospects. Who came across as, you know, a buck kicker, somebody that's going to take your head off?
Rhodes, the safety from, or the corner from Florida, the tall guy.
Right.
Florida State, I mean. He was talking like a tough guy. I liked his approach. All right, could you think of one?
You know, Elam out of Florida comes to mind. He said he really looks up to Ed Reed. Obviously, he's the younger brother of Abram Elam, but Ed Reed's somebody he looks up to. He could be a physical presence at safety, a little undersized, so you wonder how he's going to translate. And, I mean, coming back to Minter, I thought that was really interesting on how that game against Florida, where he had 20 tackles, I believe, they lost the game, but, I mean, he had the cramps, he left, had the IV situation, he comes back, and LSU nearly pulls that out. And when he was out of the game, that's when Florida kind of took their lead. So, tough, inspirational kind of leader on that defense that you at least have to think about early on. Mm-hmm.
Vaccaro, the safety from Texas. I thought he 6'2", 14. I liked the way his mindset and the way he was talking. I was impressed with that kid. He's probably going to be at least a high two.
He'll probably be long gone, right? Vaccaro by Green Bay's pick.
Oh, I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No, I don't think so. No, I don't. I think he's going to be there. You know, I don't know what he ran. I'm not sure about that. But I don't know that any safety will be gone by the time Green Bay picks.
And Phil Emery said that there's, what, five or six guys that are ready to start in the NFL in this year's safety class. Is that him blowing smoke, or do you think that there's a little truth to that statement?
No, I think there are. And last year, Phil Emery, it was maybe the worst group in 20 years of safeties. And the Bears, he needed one in the worst way, and he took Brandon Harden in the third round, a converted corner from Oregon State.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. He got hurt right away, so I don't know what he is. But, no, I don't think when Phil Emery speaks, I don't think he's blowing smoke.
Right, and you know him pretty well from over the years.
A little bit, yeah, so, right.
And just kind of, let's put a Packers spin on that safety position. Last year, they had a chance to take Harrison Smith in the first round. Guy who was solid, not spectacular at Notre Dame. They pass on him. They go for the upside of Nick Perry. 1 year in, you know, there's some questions with that decision. This year, safety could be a possibility for this team.
Absolutely,
in free
it could
agency
be.
Or the draft.
Yeah, they got Morgan Burnett. And beyond that, Jennings, McMillan, maybe Sean Richardson. That's where it's at.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, absolutely. Get one of the first three rounds.
An interesting note in one of your stories this week about Deshaun Golson, that he would be a great fit in Green Bay's defense next to Morgan Burnett.
You know, I hope to tell you, huh, Tyler?
Yeah, yeah. But he's also going to cost a lot of money.
I think, you know, on paper it looks like. Now, who's got all the money? The Bengals got a bunch, I think, right?
Yeah,
Tampa, I think.
Cincinnati, Tampa again. Yeah. I believe Indianapolis has a lot of money to
all
spend.
Right. Okay.
So there's probably another team out there that's going to be able to reel in that caliber of a player.
Yeah.
You know that the Bills just franchised Jairus Byrd. So okay. He's not available. You know, this is a defense. This is a team that's a Super Bowl contender, and it's good to trend young, to bring in all these young players. But safety is the youngest position on the team right now. It makes sense to add a veteran in theory. Not looking at the dollars and cents, they could use a veteran on the back end.
There are some other guys in free agency. Patrick Chung kind of fell out of favor in New England this year. I mean, he's going to be around. Kenny Phillips. I don't think the Giants are going to bring him back. Looks like Houston might let Glover Quinn walk. So it's a pretty good position. But Deshaun Golson, as you said, is I like that guy, man. That guy's a hitter, and he's also can play the ball. He's a pretty hot commodity.
Yeah, he is. All right, well, we got to move on to the hot topic in Green Bay. It seems like every podcast we're talking about this guy, but JerMichael Finley, you wrote the story from the Combine. We both talked to some people out there. It sounds like it's still 50-50. This is a team that's torn on the tight end, and this is going to go down to the wire.
I think they are going to ask him for a pay cut. And Finley told ESPN a couple days ago that he didn't want to take a pay cut, and he wouldn't take it. So then he's on the street. Can you see the Packers paying him that cap number, 875?
I can see them giving him one more year. I think that the coaches, I mean, when you hear Mike McCarthy talk about the guy, they want him back on the field, and he just, gosh, it sounds like a broken record, but he does have kind of a cosmic effect on the offense that helps the offense as a whole. But just let's go back to your previous point about the pay cut. Now, he's kind of getting ripped out there for those comments, and it's not necessarily going to help him and his reputation around the league when you come out and you say, I wouldn't take a pay cut. But in theory, I mean, he's just kind of telling the truth here, right? I mean, he's going to take a pay cut, and he has a lot of leverage in this situation. The way they kind of structured the deal with a lot of money in the back end, I mean, if he has the interest around the league, which, you know, from the people I've talked to is he does, that a lot of teams were inquiring about him at the Combine, you know what, hey, you know, release me, cut me.
I mean, he's so honest, and isn't that refreshing? And people rip a guy for being honest. Come on, he's just telling the truth. He doesn't want to take a pay cut. It's great. ESPN got a heck of a story, and they got the truth out of it. You know, it's the truth. Somebody answers a question legitimately and honestly.
Exactly.
Boy, how shocking is that nowadays, huh?
Right, and people want to boot him out the door. But, all right, so let's look at the reality of the situation now. People are telling you that, no, he really would not command a lot of money out on the open market.
Correct. One personnel director thought he would get between $3 and $4 million a year if he was cut. So let's say 3 years, $11 million, something like that.
Not a lot of tight ends on the open market, though, too. That's got to help his cause.
It's poor. Yeah. So it's poor. Some teams like to run the ball. Mm-hmm. You don't really run it with him. I mean, I don't know. You know, Finley. So if the Pack says, all right, let's cut you to 5.5 a year this year. You know, we'll give you 5.5 from 8, however they do it, from 8. I guess it's 8.25 on the cash, do them this year. So if you're Finley and the agent, can you get better than that? And I think they probably feel they can. And at least that one person or personnel director said they can't. So it's kind of a game of chicken here, you know.
Yeah. One other possibility would be to restructure a long-term contract and keep him around for three, 4, 5 years at an easier cap number. You don't see that happening.
Nope. I wrote that story in mid-December when that organization was done. They were done with him, and they weren't bringing him back. I mean, the key is Ted Thompson, and he makes decisions at the 11th hour. So in that last 8-9 games, he played a lot better. But to me, there's no way they're giving him a long-term contract.
So it's still a 1-year trial run.
You got it. They, like Bill Polian said, I can see what's on tape, but I don't know what Mike and Ted do to get him from Monday through Saturday. It was a there's a lot in that statement. So, no, the Packers are – if I had to bet right now, I'd say he's not on this team. And but it's going to go right down to Ted Thompson. He's going to make that call at the 11th hour.
There is also, I mean, the one fact that's just hard to ignore here is JerMichael Finley is set to make more money than Randall Cobb, James Jones, and Jordy Nelson combined. I mean, that's a tough sell inside the locker room. I mean, I know Jordy Nelson and James Jones, they signed those contracts and have completely outplayed their contracts, but that's kind of a unique, different situation that maybe the Packers don't necessarily want.
Now, can they deal him? All right. They can deal him. Everybody in the league probably thinks they're going to cut him, right? I mean, they're probably thinking it's going to be like that. All right. So normally a market, you might give a third for Finley. You know, all things, if it was just even and there was no money involved or no years. All right, so let's say the Packers try to deal him, and they give Blake Bortz the ability to go out and negotiate a long-term deal with a team, you know, that shows interest. Can Green Bay get anything better under those circumstances than a 5, a 6? The whole league thinks they're going to cut him.
Right.
I mean, maybe they could get a 5. I don't think they can get much more given these circumstances.
So if you were a betting man, Bob, I mean, we're sitting here March 1st. What's going to happen?
Okay. All right. I would say the largest chance is that he's cut. The second largest chance is that he is traded. What do you want to say? And then there's a chance he'll be retained, and there's a chance he'll take a pay cut.
Well, since it's 50-50, why don't I just take the completely other take and say he stays around for one more year?
Yep.
Okay. It's going to be interesting. You know, there's so many different factors that go into it. We didn't even talk about the other tight ends on the roster. Andrew Corliss coming back from an injury. He hasn't played a down since December of 2011. Tom Crabtree, you know, one of this team's best glue guys. You know what you're going to get out of him. He's an RFA. DJ Williams, Ryan Taylor, just haven't seen a lot of them in 2 years.
And Brandon Bostic.
Right. And Brandon Bostic. And he's an interesting one that could also...
He can run. We saw that in August, Tyler. And right. People said that he practiced well on that scout team during the season. So he can run. He's raw. But when I spoke with McCarthy on during the Combine weekend, I mean, his face kind of lit up when he talked about Bostic. Hmm. He sees potential there. Who knows? It's raw potential. Probably won't work, but it could.
All right. Johnny Jolly.
Yeah, let's talk about Johnny, huh? So Johnny's got reinstated by the commissioner. He has not played since, what, December of 09. Well, his last game would have been the Arizona playoff game.
Right, correct.
January of 2010. And he was suspended shortly or arrested and whatever, so he hasn't even been to a mini camp or anything for 3 full years. Mm-hmm. So I would think Green Bay would – he's on the books. His contract's been told. He's on the books for, what, 2.31, I believe, this year. So they bring him in. They bring him into the Hudson Center soon. They work him out. They check his weight. They talk to him for several hours. And then they make a call.
All right, so there's two parts to this. The guy's been out of football for 3 years.
Yep.
You don't know what kind of shape he's in, where he's at mentally, physically, all of that. So I think we're can both be in agreement here. The widespread sentiment is – it's worth a look. It's worth a workout. It's worth checking him out initially.
Yep.
I don't want to put words in your mouth.
I agree.
I think that's kind of what everybody believes. And so you give him a look and say he does well in shorts and he looks like he can be a factor on your team and help you out on the defensive line. Do you pull the trigger and give him a second chance?
You know, you make these decisions based on what the reward can be. You know, you're willing to take a chance on a free agent, an unsigned free agent, whereas you're not willing to take a chance on him as a second-round pick. So they need to see what they think Jolly can give him. The risk is that that his addiction continues, he breaks down, he brings shame on the organization. And it's, you know, a complete public relations nightmare, and they have to cut him, and he's arrested again. And that's not good. That's not good in Green Bay. So can he survive in Green Bay if he's reinstated? I have no idea. I don't claim to know. I don't know what he's like the last 3 years.
So, I mean, theoretically, could they, you know, put in some rules, some guidelines, some clauses into his deal that, look, if we're going to give you the second chance, you're staying in Green Bay, you're going to stay incubated in this area. I mean, the plus side is we're talking about Green Bay, Wisconsin. You know, we're not talking about Houston, New York, you know, bigger cities where he can get into some trouble here. There has been times where he's been in Green Bay and he's stayed out of trouble. It's more of the off season. What happens when you're going home is when the addiction kind of kicked in.
Yeah, I mean they can give him almost a babysitter or something like that during the season. But I mean you can't keep a guy to Green Bay.
Yeah.
If he maybe plays a season in Green Bay, he's going to go back to Houston, and that's where all his buddies are. And that's where all this codeine stuff occurred.
The flip side of it is they could definitely use him. I mean, if he was the Johnny Jolly of 2009, this defense has a role for him on the field.
He's an excellent player, Tyler. He had a fine year. I gave him a B, I think it was, that year, and it was a solid B. I mean, he was tough at the point. Mm-hmm. That's when they were, what, number one in the league against the – number one against the run in 09. 10, 11, 12, they've been almost terrible.
Well, let's look at the defensive line. I mean, a year ago, you remember the buzzword, it was juice. They go out, they sign Anthony Hargrove, they sign Daniel Muir, they draft Jarrell Worthy, they draft Mike Daniels, they have all of these undersized, fast pass rushers. They're going to cycle in, they're going to have this rotation, they're going to get after the quarterback. Fast forward to this year, and they kind of need those bigger guys, right?
They need height. Yeah, they do. Bring back Howard Green.
Oh, man.
We need Howard.
We got to get Howard back. Howard Green back in the fold. One of the all-time good guys in that locker room, without a doubt.
Yep.
Big Boston Celtics fan, too.
Was he?
Big NBA fan, big Celtics fan.
So right? What's he doing in that trucking business you wrote about down in Louisiana?
Gosh, that was a long time ago. I do remember this, well, during the lockout, talking to some guys and kind of how they were keeping in shape. Howard Green said he was gardening. He was playing with the kids, running around the house. I mean, he's a big guy. He doesn't have to go out and be doing wind sprints throughout the lockout. But so let's look at it. Colin Jenkins, Chris Canty. You had the report on San Francisco's Francois. So there's some options here.
So Jenkins, according to our buddy Tom Silverstein, has got six teams after him. He's in New York today. I heard that from an agent this morning. So it looks like Jenkins is not on Green Bay's radar. You know, I think he's going to be a part-time player, an inside pass rusher if he goes to New York. That's exactly what he'll be, just like what Dave Tollefson was in 2011.
Chris Canty is the interesting one. He was a possibility here in Green Bay a couple years ago. They didn't give him the big contract. Now, at a reduced rate, he would seem to make a lot of sense, but what can he give you? How much game does he have left?
I wish I knew. I don't really know how he played this year. He's 6'7". I guess he's quite a guy. He's a great guy. Should bring some leadership. Of course, Jenkins is a big-time locker room guy, too. I just don't know on Canty.
Yeah.
Jean-Francois, he doesn't give him the length. He's 6'2.5". He's a very nasty guy. I remember talking to him at the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see him at it? Or you weren't there this year. That was the year before. I'm sorry. He's a nasty guy now. He's a bit belligerent, but that's all good. We talk about soft. Maybe we can talk about softness.
That's a word you always want in your scouting report. Belligerent.
I think Ricky Jean-Francois, he looks like the kind of guy you'd like to add to your team to bring a little starch to it.
Okay, so they're not going to go out and they're not going to go on this big spending spree, but there's some areas, some positions where they can go out and maybe sign a player here and there to supplement what they already have. Because I think that's a lot of the furor with fans right now after that shellac in San Francisco is they want massive sweeping change. First it was Dom Capers off of his head. Now it's bring in a stud, bring in a star, somebody different that's going to add to this defense. Realistically, though, that's not going to be the case.
Green Bay needs to bring back Aaron Rodgers, Clay Matthews, and B.J. Raji to ensure they're here long term. That's where that money's going, right?
Correct. Yep. You would think so. Let's move on back. Let's just redirect back to the combine. I think a lot of listeners out there watched the Badgers, Wisconsin. They had a lot of guys in Indy. Monty Ball, or Monte Ball, as he wants to be called now, it appears. Travis Frederick, Ricky Wagner, and Taylor, the linebacker. A handful of guys, and not a great week for them in Indy.
Well, let's talk about Frederick first. You know, I thought he was 335, 340, and he checked in at 312. I thought to myself, wow, he must be doing this to run a good 40 and to work out really well. Guys are known to do that, and then they start putting it back on after this. And then, you know, if they run well at the combine, they start adding the weight back. They don't work out at pro day.
Hmm.
All they do is get measured again or something. Well, Frederick, he comes in at 312, and he runs 5.58.
Yeah.
He kind of kills himself. I mean, I talked to a couple people after that, scouts, and it was disappointing as heck. That's just a bad, terrible time.
I mean, potentially when you can be the top center in the draft class. Now, these centers, they're not going to go out on Sundays and run a 40-yard dash. But, I mean, as we saw, it's important for a center to get to the second level in the run game. You have to be quick in short spaces. He didn't really look like that player. I believe, like, in his shuttles and his cone drill, he wasn't that great either.
First time I laid eyes on Jeff Saturday was the first practice in August or late July this year. And the Packers were, I don't even know if they were in pads. It was the first day, though. And they were running a screen drill against air. And then he was with the number one offense, of course. And I had never seen the guy on the Packer practice field before. And I just looked out there, and I saw him run a screen. And after having seen Scott Wells do that for 7 years, it was just the most jarring. I can picture that to this day. I mean, it was just so jarring. He couldn't run. Saturday was probably, at this point, 5'8". Seriously. Mm-hmm. Maybe a 5'8", 40. And Wells would be a 5'1", 5'05". And people say a center, it's important.
Yeah.
It's important to get off the double team and use quickness to get to the linebacker, to scrape off to him. And it's also important on screens. It's important on getting downfield, knocking people off piles. Is speed helps everywhere, Tyler, right?
Well, let's talk about the center position here in Green Bay. I mean, I heard there at the combine that Evan Dietrich Smith's agent met with the Packers brass and that they view him as their quote-unquote center of the future. They're trying to work on a deal. You know, whether or not that's a tender and they give him that one-year tender, they see how he performs early in the year, and then maybe he gets that multi-year deal. We're going to find out. But it sounds like they want him to be their center. So between, you know, Frederick kind of really wiping out here at the combine, having other needs in the draft, and Dietrich Smith coming on late, kind of you can kind of see things clearing up at center right now.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think they're looks like they're going to go with him. I think they are. Mm-hmm. So now we better talk about Monte Ball. Yeah. All right. So you were at his press conference, and you wrote about him. So, and I was at his press conference as well. To me, he came across great. Mm-hmm. I loved his level of confidence. Man, the guy stood up there. I love the way he spoke. It was impressive, really impressive. He was one of the more impressive guys I saw.
I agree. I thought he had a great press conference there.
And yep.
He kind of acknowledged that he doesn't do anything great, anything spectacular, but that, you know, the Curtis Martin comparison keeps coming up, and he wants to be a guy who's just reliable, dependable. And this was right before Mike McCarthy spoke. And then Mike McCarthy, when he talked, he said they're looking for a three-down back, somebody who can carry the ball, can be reliable for 16 games. They ran the ball better last year toward the end of the year, but they didn't have that guy. I mean, they were constantly shuffling different personnel in.
Yep.
So maybe that player's on the roster now. Maybe it isn't. Monte Ball is a possibility. Talking to him out in the hallway before he left, asked him what he wanted to run in the 40. Wouldn't give a time. He kind of joked 4-2. Referencing Chris Johnson's time, said he'd run fast, and off he went. Then he runs a 4.66. Now, he's not a speed guy. He doesn't necessarily have a lot of burst. He's not very strong. Didn't do great on the bench press either. How much does this 40 time really affect Monte Ball's draft stock? Because that's not the platform for him. This isn't going to showcase what he does best. With Monte Ball, it's all about football. It's about the film. But a 4.66 is not good.
You know, he gained, the more and more you talk to scouts, it's really like the SEC and then the minor leagues. You know, I'm hearing this a lot. So Ball got all these touchdowns basically against the Big Ten. And I'm a Big Ten guy, Tyler. You're not, but I mean, I am. That's born and raised in Big Ten country. But, all right, so he's running a 4.66. Now, let's just take that for what it is. He's just going to get run down and smothered if, in fact, that's his time. And that's what he is at age 22. That's a really slow time. Now, I know Alfred Malone in a one-back set. I mean, I know there's exceptions. Of course, there's exceptions to everything. But you can go back through 20 years of my draft records and look at 4.66 backs, and I dare say hardly any of them have ever done anything.
Well, let's go. You just made an interesting point right there. I mean, is the SEC considered a different planet than the rest of college football?
Yes, I totally believe that. Increasingly so.
Yeah, but a lot of SEC guys don't necessarily work out in the pros. I
mean, of course.
A lot of guys who play well down there, but just the overall tempo, the overall speed.
Yeah.
I mean, Buddy Nix, he's a former Southern scout down there. He's filling the Buffalo Bills roster with SEC guys, and they just keep running in circles. I don't know. I mean, but you know, the fact that Monte Ball did this in the Big Ten doesn't necessarily mean as much as maybe a back in the SEC.
It sure in the heck doesn't anymore. It's a sad state of affairs, but that's the way the NFL people look at it. I mean, I don't see enough of this SEC to really have any idea. But when you talk to NFL people, and they do, it's just the caliber of competition a Wisconsin plays compared to a Mississippi State, you know?
Yeah, and that's very true. Well, let's talk about one of those SEC guys. Eddie Lacy is another back who probably helped himself by default.
let's mention one thing on Ball. He's going to get another shot March 6th next week at Pro Day, right?
True.
And everybody times faster at Wisconsin. They just do. Those times at Madison have helped those kids over the years. And he's got to get in those low mid 4.5s. He's got to. All right, I'm sorry. Now let's go to Lacey, right? Talk about him a little bit.
Right, I mean, here's a big guy who's nimble. He can move. Didn't work out at the combine. He had the injury working out beforehand.
Yeah.
Kind of helped himself maybe by default a little bit. I mean, you're seeing him as the top-rated running back still. It's not a good class for backs.
No.
At least at the top.
Right. I think Lacey gets in the first round, don't you? I kind of think he does.
Yeah.
He's a tough, hard-nosed guy. But no, it's not a good year for backs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
At his presser, too, I mean, he's another confident, pretty self-assured kind of player there. So he's played in a lot of big games, produced in big games. And I think a big difference between Lacey, Ball, and even Taylor at Stanford is Lacey was highly productive, but he also had another back with him. There's not as many miles there on the odometer for him coming into the league. That's going to be pretty important for teams, I would think.
I know this, in that Alabama game, Monte Tail couldn't handle Eddie Lacey. You saw some of that?
Yeah. It was pretty embarrassing for old Teo. All right, well, let's finish it with one topic here, Bob. The Packers being too soft. You asked Mike McCarthy this in your one-on-one with the coach. It's a sore spot for him, for other coaches, for players. They don't like to be called soft. Are they soft? And I mean, what was his reaction when you brought that up?
Well, we also discussed the size. And he did not dispute that at all. They are small. I mean, we've been through all this. They're small at offensive tackle. They're short on the defensive line. They're not physical at cornerback. Without Bishop, they didn't have a big killer at inside backer. They don't have an enforcer at safety. We can just keep going. The center was, undersized. They got a 5'7" back at the end of the year. So they're small. And the average NFL weights and all those stats reflect that. In terms of soft, McCarthy, he disputed that, but when he talked further about it, he kind of indicated to me that they're somewhere in the middle of the league in terms of physicality. Is that a word?
Yeah, absolutely.
Physicality?
Absolutely.
As a noun?
Yeah.
All right. So in the middle of the league, that might be right. Who knows? These are nebulous arguments,
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've seen them. But they don't stop the run well, and they really don't run the ball against base defenses or in short yardage. I mean, they're not going to do that. Do they hit hard? I don't see a whole lot of explosive hits out of Green Bay's defense.
No, they were fined a ton this past year, so there was that anyways.
Yeah, there was some fines. So, I don't know. So, I mean, McCarthy answered all these questions. Certainly give him credit for that, and he just disputes, and he went back to the 2010 playoffs when they played four physical games in a row. He mentioned the Steelers Super Bowl victory. And I said, yeah, I think it's kind of slipped in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how do you see it in this regard?
Well, I think you kind of hit on the main point there, that it's a lack of size does not help this team. Obviously, the guys they brought in last offseason were a little smaller on the defensive line. But, at the same time, though, they do have big guys in Pickett and B.J. Raji. At linebacker, Perry's a big guy, so they're going to be counting on him next year.
True.
The question is, I mean, what changes do you make personnel-wise? You can't really do anything too substantial. I mean, this is a playoff team, a contending team, but is it more of a tweak here and there? I mean, you talked to Mike McCarthy about the difference between fundamentals and scheme. What changes do they have to make between now and week one to overcome either a lack of size or toughness?
Well, just for example, let's look at tight end, right? If they get rid of Finley, then they're going to become a tougher team?
Yeah, you could say that.
They would eliminate one poor run blocker, and Corliss, I assume, would have the inside track at starting, and he's become a pretty good run blocker, and he's a thicker kind of a guy. So that's just something, that's one. All right, if you don't want to start DeJuan Harris and you draft Monty Ball, a 215-pound guy, or another bigger back. Okay, that's another way you do it. Maybe you get what would be another one? You get an enforcer type, more of a box safety.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's not real ideal against the pass, but you can do something like this. And you get a tall defensive lineman. You get more of a butt kicker at the other outside linebacker opposite Clay Matthews. There are ways to address this, and they've got to do it.
Yeah, very true. I mean, a lot of good points right there. Well, let's just wrap it up with a few questions on Twitter, Bob.
Yeah.
This one comes from Dan Kowalski. Any word on who the Packers came away most impressed with interview-wise at the Combine? It's always tough to – I mean, the Packers aren't going to come out and say anything about any draft prospects at all, so we're just kind of talking to these prospects themselves and asking them if they visited with the Packers, how it went. You know, a lot of guys did. First of all, whenever you see reports out there that the Packers met with such and such, and we put them in blog posts and stories, I think it's important to an extent. But this team is meeting with so many guys that you can't necessarily point to it and say, whoa, holy cow, they met with this guy?
Yeah. I mean, they met with guys at the East-West, the Shrine Game, the Senior Bowl, the NFLPA Collegiate Game. There's like six of these. They've met with guys. So if they met with a guy in Mobile or East-West, they're not going to – what are they at, 60 people at the Combine? They're not going to waste them to do a guy again. So where they meet with these people – they had area scouts go through these places during the fall and talk to these kids. It's just not really newsy who they meet with in Indy.
Yeah, I mean, when you slap a headline on that, it's kind of National Enquirer-esque, really. But still, I mean, they did the guy. Some players we talked to that met with the Packers. I guess Marcus Wheaton said he met with them. Robert Woods at wide receivers. So they're looking at everything. Werner at Florida State, Manti Te'o. I mean, we can go on and on here. So how did it go? We just don't really know right now. All right, and let's get to one more here from Michael Rose at the Michael Rose. Which 2 to 3 players aren't good enough to be drafted yet are somehow good enough to start for the Packers in the playoffs next year? Not quite sure what he's getting at there, Bob. Can you figure that one out?
Yeah, I'm not that far along to know who's going to be a 6 and a 7 or who's going to be a priority free agent. You know, I just, I'm not that far along. I don't really know. You got anybody in mind?
Well, let's kind of like, let's put a different spin on that, a different twist. What players on this defense or even the offense last year that really didn't play key roles on the team at all could next season? Who's going to take that next step? Because that's what they're counting on is guys kind of taking it, they're elevating their play and improving.
Well, Jeremy Ross was not drafted on offense. I mean, I think he could become a real key player. Desmond Moses, do you see him getting better? I do.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Between year one and year two, he could get better. I'd like to know something about Jordan Miller, that inside pass rushing DT who they signed late in the year. I guess he played 10 snaps from scrimmage, but I'd like to know more about him. Don't know.
Sean Richardson, too, an undrafted guy out of Vanderbilt. Tall safety offers kind of a different dimension than what they have right now. And I think Tom made this point late last season. He's the kind of safety who might be able to help you against a team like San Francisco with a mobile guy, a quarterback.
Yeah.
All righty. I think that's going to do it for us today, Bob. Unless there's something else you want to add.
No, thanks, Tyler. Thanks for listening.
All righty, guys. Tune in next week, possibly, maybe, Bob. We'll figure it out.
We'll see, huh?
See how it goes.
We could talk high school basketball.
We could. And maybe some little Michigan basketball. NIT, possibly.
Yeah, they're going to go down to the Spartans on Sunday. I don't think we want to discuss that.
Hey, the NIT is a good tournament, Bob. There's nothing to be ashamed of there. All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
The last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect to your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.